Embered ecstasy. Better. Better than any of the pleasures you sell. But I control my appetites, and that's what makes us human rather than slaves, isn't it? He was pulling on a thick leather glove. The portcullis of his gate was rising as he spoke. Outside, Mama Kay saw dozens of ragged peasants gathered. Obviously, this was a daily ritual. Below, four servants were carrying a table laden with food into the garden. They set it down and walked back inside. These wretches are slaves to their appetites. Slaves, not men. The starving peasants behind pushed forward, and those in front were pushed aside. They looked at the spiked portcullis above them, and then at Roth and Mama Kay. But their eyes were mostly on the food. They looked like animals, hunger driving them wild. A young woman made a break for it. She sprinted forward. After she had only taken a few steps, others followed her. There were old men and young, women, children. The only thing they seemed to have in common was desperation. But Mama Kay couldn't see the reason for their frenzy. They reached the food and tore into it, stuffing pockets full of sausages, stuffing their mouths full of delicacies so rich they'd probably be sick later. A servant handed an arbalast to Roth. It was already drawn and loaded. "What are you doing?" Mama Kay asked. The peasants saw him and scattered. "I kill by a very simple pattern," Roth said, lifting the weapon. He pressed the trigger plate, and a young man dropped with a bolt in his spine. Roth set the point of the arbalast down, but instead of cranking the winch to draw back the string, he grabbed the string with his glove and drew it back by hand. For the barest moment, black, tattoo-like markings rose up as if from beneath the surface of his skin and writhed with power. It was impossible. He shot again, and the young woman who had been the first to run for the table fell gracelessly. "I feed my little herd every day. The first week of the month, I kill on the first day. The second week, the second day." He paused as the arbalast drew level again. He shot, and another woman dropped as a bolt blew through her head. And so on. "But I never kill more than four." Most of the peasants were gone now, except for one old man moving at a crawl toward the gate that was still 30 paces distant. The bolt clipped the old man's knee. He fell with a scream and started crawling. The slaves never figure it out. They're ruled by their bellies, not their brains. Roth waited until the old man reached the gate, missed a shot, then tried again, killing him. "See that one?" Mama Kay saw a peasant come in through the portcullis. All the others had scattered. "He is my favorite," Roth said. "He figured out the pattern." The man walked inside, unafraid, nodded to Roth, and then went to the table and started to eat without haste. Of course, he could tell the others and save a few lives, but then I might change the pattern, and he'd lose his edge. "He's a survivor, Guinevere. Survivors are willing to make sacrifices." Roth handed the arbalast and the glove to a servant and regarded Mama Kay. "So, the question is, are you a survivor?"
"I've survived more than you'll ever know."
"You have your vote." She'd kill him later. There was no showing weakness now, no matter how she felt. He was an animal, and he would sense her fear. "Oh, I want more than your vote,"
I want Durzo Blint. I want the Silver Kakari. I want much more. And I'll get it. With your help. He smiled. How'd you like the braised peasant? She shook her head, distracted, looking blandly at her empty plate. Then she froze. In the garden, servants were collecting the bodies and bringing them inside. You did say pheasant, she said. Roth just smiled.
Chapter 31. Well, if you don't look like the south end of a northbound horse, Logan said as he intercepted Kylar in the middle of the Drake's yard. Thanks, Kylar said. He stepped past Logan, but his friend didn't move. What do you want, Logan? Hmm? Logan asked. He was a picture of innocence. At least, if a picture of innocence could be so tall. Nor was he able to get by with the big oaf routine. For one thing, Logan was far too intelligent for anyone to take a dumb act seriously. For another, he was too damn handsome. If there were a model of perfect masculinity in the realm, it was Logan. He was like a heroic statue made flesh. 6 months a year with his father had lined his big frame with muscle and given him a hard edge that had more than just the young women of Cenaria swooning. Perfect teeth, perfect hair, and, of course, ridiculous amounts of money that would be his when he reached 21. In 3 days, filled out the picture. He drew almost as much attention as his friend, Prince Aline, and even more from the girls who weren't interested in being bedded and then dropped the next day. His saving grace was that he had absolutely no idea how attractive he was, or how much people admired and envied him. It was why Kylar had nicknamed him Ogre. Logan, unless you were just standing in the yard, you came out here when you saw me come in the gate, which means you were waiting for me. Now you're standing there rather than walking with me, which means you don't want anyone to overhear what you're about to say. Sira isn't in her regular place 2 steps behind you, which means she's with your mother, shopping for dresses or something. Embroidery, Logan admitted. So what is it? Kylar asked. Logan shifted from one foot to the other. I hate it when you do that. You could have let me get to it in my own time. I was going to... Hey, where do you think you're going? Kylar kept walking. You're stalling. All right, just stop. I was thinking that sometime we ought to pull out the old fisticuffs, Logan said. Fisticuffs. And people expected that someone so big to be dumb. You'd beat me black and blue, Kylar said, smiling the lie. If they fought, Logan would ask questions. He'd wonder. It was unlikely, but he might even guess that it hadn't truly been 9 years since they'd last fought. You don't think I'd win, do you? Logan asked. Ever since Logan had been humiliated in the fight at the stadium, he'd gotten serious about training. He put in hours every day with the best non-Sakage swordmasters in the city. Every time we fought, you've slaughtered me. I'm... Every? Once? And that was 10 years ago. 9. Regardless, Logan said. If you caught me with one of those anvils you pass off as your fists, I'd never get up, Kylar said. That was true enough. I'd be careful.
I'm no match for an ogre.
Something was wrong. Logan asked him to fight about once a year, but never so strenuously. Logan's honor wouldn't allow him to push a friend who'd made a decision clear, even if he didn't understand why. What's this about, Logan? Why do you want to fight? Lord Gyre looked down and scratched his head. Sierra's asked why we don't spar with each other. She thinks it would be a good match. Not that she wants to see us get hurt, but... Logan trailed off, awkwardly. But you can't help but want to show off a little, Kylar thought. He said, Speaking of good matches, when are you going to march to the headsman's block and finally marry her? Ogre breathed a big sigh. All of his sighs were big, but this was a proportionally big sigh. It took a while. He grabbed a stable boy's stool and sat on it, oblivious of his fine cloak dragging in the dirt. Actually, I spoke with Count Drake about that a couple days ago. You did? Kylar asked. And? He approves. Congratulations! When'll it be, you big about-to-be unbachelored bastard? Ogre stared at nothing. But he's worried. Are you joking? Logan shook his head. But he's known you since you were born. Your families are best friends. She's marrying up in terms of title, way up. You've got great prospects, and you two have been practically betrothed for years. What can he possibly be worried about? Logan fixed his eyes on Kylar's. He said you'd know. Is she in love with you? Oof. No, Kylar said after too long a pause. Logan noticed. Is she? Kylar hesitated. I think she doesn't know who she loves herself. It was a lie of omission. Logan was on the wrong track. Sierra didn't love Kylar, and he didn't even like her. I've loved her for my whole life, Kylar. Kylar didn't have anything to say. Kylar? Ogre stared at him intently. Yes? Do you love her? No. Kylar felt sick and furious, but his face showed nothing. He'd told Sierra she had to confess to Logan, demanded it. She'd promised she would.
Logan looked at him. But his face didn't clear the way Kylar expected it to.
Sir, a voice said behind Kylar. Kylar hadn't even heard the porter approaching. Yes? He asked the old man. A messenger just came with this for you. Kylar opened the unsealed message to avoid looking at Logan. It read, You must see me. Tonight at the 10th hour. Blue Boar. Jarl. A chill shot through Kylar. Jarl. He hadn't heard from Jarl since he'd left the streets. Jarl was supposed to think he was dead. That meant Jarl was either seeking him because he needed Kylar Stern, or because he knew that Kylar was Azoth. Kylar couldn't imagine any reason that Jarl would need to see Kylar Stern. If Jarl knew who he was, who else knew, too? Master Blint was already gone. Kylar would have to see him. He'd have to take care of this on his own. I have to go, he said. He turned and strode toward the gate. Kylar, Logan said. Kylar turned. Do you trust me? He asked. Logan raised his hands helplessly. Yes. Then trust me. The Blue Boar was one of Mama Kay's nicest brothels. It was off Sidlin Way on the east side, not far from the Tomoy Bridge. It had a reputation for having some of the best wines in the city, a fact not a few merchants mentioned when their wives asked awkward questions. A friend told me she saw you go into the Blue Boar today. Yes, of course, dear. Business meeting. Wonderful wine selection. It was Kylar's first visit. The brothel had three stories. The first, where food and wine were served, resembled a nice inn. A sign denoted the second floor as the lounge, and the third as guest rooms.
Hello, my lord.
A breathy voice said next to Kylar as he stood awkwardly just inside the entrance.
He turned and felt his cheeks growing hot. The woman stood very close to him, close enough that the spicy scent of her perfume wafted over him. Her voice was pitched low and inviting, too, like they shared secrets, or soon could.
But that was nothing compared with what she was wearing. He had no idea if it would be called a dress, for though it covered her from neck to ankles, it was made entirely of white lace. It wasn't a tight pattern, and she wasn't wearing anything underneath it.
"Excuse me?"
he said, pulling his gaze back up to her eyes and blushing even deeper.
"Is there any way I can help you? Would you like me to bring you a glass of Sethi Red and explain our range of services?"
She seemed amused at his difficulties.
"No, thank you, m'lady,"
he said.
"Perhaps you'd prefer to come to the lounge and speak with me more privately,"
she said, running a finger along his jawline.
"Actually, I'd prefer not to, thank you all the same."
She arched an eyebrow at him, as if he had suggested something devilish.
"Normally I like a man to warm me up a little, but if you want to go straight to my room, I'd be..."
"No," Kylar said, then realized he'd raised his voice and people were turning to look at him.
"I mean, no thank you. I'm here to see Jarl."
"Oh, you're one of those," she said, her voice abruptly normal. The switch was total, jarring. Kylar noticed for the first time that she wasn't even his age. She couldn't be more than 17. Involuntarily, he thought of Mags. "Jarl's in the office. That way," she said.
Now that she'd abandoned seducing him, Kylar saw her differently. She looked hard, brittle. As he walked away, he heard her say,
"Seems like the good-looking ones always hoe the other row."
He didn't know what she meant, but he kept walking, worried she was laughing at him. He was halfway through the tables on his way to the office when he looked back. She was plying her trade with an older merchant, whispering something in his ear. The man beamed. Kylar knocked on the door of the office. The door opened.
"Come in quickly,"
Jarl said. Kylar stepped inside, his mind a whirl. Jarl, for it was undoubtedly his old friend, had grown into a handsome man. He was impeccably dressed in the newest fashion, his tunic indigo silk, his pants tight fawn skin, adorned with a belt of worked silver. Jarl's dark hair had been woven into a multitude of small, long braids, each oiled and drawn back. He had an appraising look in his eyes. There was a slight sound of cloth on cloth from the corner, someone moving toward Kylar from behind his field of vision. Kylar kicked instinctively. His foot caught the bodyguard on the chest. Though the guard was a big man, Kylar could feel his ribs cracking. The man flew backward into the wall. He slid down and lay on the floor, unmoving. Scanning the rest of the room in an instant, Kylar saw no other threats. Jarl had his hands spread to show he had no weapons.
"He wasn't going to attack you. He was just making sure you didn't have weapons. I swear it."
Jarl looked at the man on the floor.
"By the High King's balls, you've killed him."
Scowling, Kylar looked at the man, sprawled unconscious in the corner. He knelt by him and put fingers against the man's neck. Nothing. He ran his hands across the man's chest to feel if one of the broken ribs might have penetrated his heart. Then he slammed his fist down the man's chest. And again.
What the hell are you—
Jarl cut off as the man's chest suddenly rose. The bodyguard coughed and moaned. Kylar knew that every breath would be agony for the man, but he'd live. Get someone to take care of him, Kylar said. His ribs are broken. Eyes wide, Jarl went into the main room and came back a few moments later with two more bodyguards. Like the first, they were big and brawny, and looked like they might be able to use the short swords at their sides. They merely glared at Kylar and picked up the big man between them. They carried him out of the room, and Jarl closed the door behind them.
You've learned a thing or two, haven't you?
Jarl said.
I wasn't testing you.
He insisted on being here. I didn't think...
Never mind.
After a moment of staring at his friend, Kylar said,
You look well.
Don't you mean, how in the nine hells did you find me, Jarl?
Jarl laughed.
How in the nine hells did you find me, Jarl?
Jarl smiled.
I never lost you. I never believed you were dead.
No.
You never could get anything past me, Azoth.
Don't say that name.
That boy's dead.
Is he?
Jarl asked.
That's a shame.
Silence sat in the room as the men looked at each other. Kylar didn't know what to do. Jarl had been his friend. Azoth's friend, anyway. But was he Kylar's friend? That he knew who Kylar was, maybe had known for years, told Kylar that he wasn't an enemy. At least not yet. Part of Kylar wanted to believe that Jarl just wanted to see him, wanted a chance to say goodbye that they'd never been afforded on the street. But he'd spent too many years with Master Blint to take such a naive view. If Jarl had called him in now, it was because Jarl wanted something.
We've both come a long way, haven't we?
Jarl asked.
Is that what you brought me here to talk about?
A long way,
Jarl said, disappointed.
Part of me was hoping you hadn't changed as much as I have, Kylar. I've been wanting to see you for years, ever since you left, really. I wanted to apologize.
Apologize?
I didn't mean to let her die, Kylar. I just couldn't get away much. I tried, but even sometimes when I did get away, I couldn't find her. She had to move around a lot, but then she disappeared. I never even found out what happened. I'm so sorry.
Tears gleamed in Jarl's eyes, and he looked away. His jaw clenched tight.
He thinks Eline is dead. He blames himself. He's been living with that guilt for all these years.
Kylar opened his mouth to tell him that she was alive, that she was doing well from all the reports he got, that sometimes he watched her from afar on the days she went out shopping. But no sound came. Two can keep a secret, Blint used to say, if one of them is dead. Kylar didn't know Jarl now. He was managing one of Mama Kay's brothels, so Jarl certainly reported to her, but maybe he reported to others as well. It was too dangerous. Kylar couldn't tell him.
Relationships are ropes that bind. Love is a noose.
The only thing that kept Kylar safe was that no one knew there was a noose with his name on it. Even if he didn't know where Eline was. She was safe somewhere on the east side. Maybe married by now. She would be 17 after all. Maybe even happy. She looked happy.
but he didn't even sneak close. Master Blint was right. The only thing keeping Eline safe was Kylar's distance. Jarl's guilt wasn't enough to outweigh Eline's safety. Nothing was.
Damn it, Master Blint. How do you live like this? How can you be so strong? So hard?
I never held it against you, Kylar said. It was pathetic. He knew it wouldn't help, but there was nothing more he could offer. Jarl blinked, and when he met Kylar's eyes, his dark eyes were dry. If that were all, I would never have asked you to come. Durzo Blint has enemies, and so do you.
That's not exactly news, Kylar said.
No matter that he and Blint never spoke about the jobs they did, and that anyone who knew of their work firsthand was dead, word got out. Word always gets out. Another wet boy would attribute a job to them. A client would brag about who he'd hired. They had enemies they'd wronged, and more enemies who only thought that Durzo had wronged them. It was one of the costs of being the best. The families of debtors never attributed a successful hit to a second-rate wet boy.
Do you remember Roth?
One of Rat's Biggs? Kylar asked.
Yes. Apparently he's smarter than we ever realized. After Rat died, well, everyone left like the guild was burning down. The other guilds moved in and took our territory. Everyone had to scramble to survive. Roth didn't make any friends when he was Rat's right hand. He nearly got killed half a dozen times. Apparently, he always blamed you.
Me?
For killing Rat. If you hadn't killed him, no one would have dared come after Roth. He never believed you were dead either. But he hasn't been in a position to find out who you became.
That's changing.
Kylar's chest was tight. Does he know I'm alive?
No. But he'll sit with the Nine within a year, maybe sooner. There's a spot open right now that he's trying for. From a position of that kind of power, he'll find you. I haven't even met him, but the stories I hear... He's a real twist. Cruel. Vengeful. He frightens me, Kylar. He frightens me like no one since you know who.
So that's why you invited me here? So you could tell me that Roth is coming after me? Kylar asked.
Yes, but there's more to it, Jarl said. There's going to be a war.
War? Hold on. What's your part, Jarl? How do you know all this?
Jarl paused. You've spent the last 10 years under Master Blint's tutelage. I've spent the last 10 years under Mama Kay's, and just as you've learned more than fighting, I've learned more than... fornicating. This city's secrets flow through its bedchambers.
That was Mama Kay speaking, sure enough.
But why are you helping me? A lot's changed since we were guild rats stealing bread.
Jarl shrugged, looked away again.
You're my only friend.
Sure, when we were children.
Not you were. You are. You're the only friend I've ever had, Kylar.
Trying to beat back his sudden guilt, how long had it been since he'd thought of Jarl? Kylar said,
What about everyone here, the people you work with?
Co-workers, employees, and clients. I've even got something like a lover, but no friends.
You've got a lover and she's not your friend?
Her name's Stefan. She's a 53-year-old cloth merchant with a wife and 8 children. He gives me protection and beautiful clothes. And I give him sex.
Oh.
Suddenly, the whore's muttering about hoeing the other row made a lot more sense.
Are you happy here, Jarl?
Happy?
What the hell kind of question is that? Happy doesn't have anything to do with it.
I'm sorry.
Jarl laughed bitterly.
Where'd you get your innocence back, Kylar? You said Azoth was dead.
What are you talking about?
Are you going to leave now that you know I'm a bugger?
No, Kylar said. You're my friend.
And you're mine. But if I hadn't seen you nearly kill Gurk just now, I'd wonder if you really were a wet boy.
How do you kill people and keep your soul intact, Kylar?
He gave the name a little twist.
How do you keep your soul intact and whore?
I don't.
Me neither,
Kylar said.
Jarl went quiet. He studied Kylar intently.
What happened that day?
Kylar knew what Jarl was asking. A tremor passed through him.
Durzo told me if I wanted to be his apprentice, I had to kill Rat.
After what he did to Dollgirl.
I did it.
Easy as that, huh?
Kylar debated lying, but if anyone deserved the truth, it was Jarl. He'd suffered more at Rat's hands than anyone. After holding back about Dollgirl, he couldn't do it again. Kylar told him the whole story, like he hadn't told anyone since Master Blint. The description of the gore and how pathetic Rat had been didn't move Jarl. His face remained passive.
He deserved it.
He deserved it, and then some, Jarl said.
I only wish I'd had the nerve to do it. I wish I could have watched.
He dismissed it with an effeminate wave of his hand.
I've got a client coming, so listen, Jarl said. Kalador is going to invade. Different parts of the Sakage have been mobilized, but they're mostly smokescreens. Probably only the Nine know what's really happening, maybe only the Shinga. I can't even tell which side we're going to take. The thing is, we can't afford for Sanaria to lose this war. I don't know if the Nine realize that. The Orsuls have put forward claims on Sanaria for generations. But several months ago, God King Ursul demanded a tribute of some special gem and free passage, claiming to be more interested in taking war to Modai than here. King Gunder told him where he could go, and it wasn't across the king's highways. A source told me the God King vowed to make us an example. He's got more than 50 witches, maybe many more. I don't think King Gunder can field 10 mages to stand against them.
But the Sakage will survive, Kylar said. Not that he gave a damn about them. He was thinking about the Drakes and Logan. The Kaladorans would kill them.
The Sakage will survive, Kylar. But if all the businesses are burned down, there's no money to extort. If all the merchants are broke, they can't gamble or go whoring. Some wars we can profit from. This one will ruin us.
So why tell me?
Durzo's in the middle of it.
Of course he is, Kylar said. Probably half the nobles in the army's chain of command are trying to off their superiors so they can take their places. But Master Blint wouldn't take a job that would seriously endanger the city. Not if things are as bad as you say.
Jarl shook his head.
I think he's working for the king.
Master Blint would never work for the king, Kylar said.
He would, if they had his daughter.
His what?
Chapter 32. Lord General Aegon stood in the middle of the brushed white gravel of the castle's statue garden and tried not to look as uneasy as he felt.
Damn fine place to meet an assassin.
Ordinarily, he would think it was fine place to meet an assassin, though Blint had ordered him not to bring soldiers. If he had been of a mind to do so, there were any number of places for them to hide. Of course,
that this meeting was happening within the castle grounds should also have made Aegon feel better. It might have, if Blint hadn't been the one who suggested it. The night wind blew a cloud across the moon, and Aegon strained to hear the slight crunch of gravel that would herald Blint's arrival. He had no doubt that Blint could make it into the castle. His memory was as sharp as the daggers that they'd once found under the royal pillows. Still, he had his orders. He looked at the statues around him. They were heroes, every one of them, and he wondered what he was doing in their company. Usually this garden was a haven. He would walk on the serene white and black rock and stare at these marble heroes, wondering how they might act if they were in his shoes. Tonight, their shadows loomed and lingered. Of course, it was his imagination, but he still remembered that Blint had been in his bedroom 10 years ago, ready to do murder. Nothing was safe with a man like that. There was the slightest crunch of gravel under one of the statues. Aegon turned, and without thinking, gripped his sword. "Don't bother," Durzo Blint said. Aegon whipped back around. Durzo was standing not 2 feet away. Aegon stepped back. "The noisy one was one of yours, not me." Blint smiled wolfishly. "But wait, didn't I tell you not to bring men?"
"I didn't,"
Aegon said. "Mm-hmm.
You're late,"
Aegon said. He had his equilibrium back now. It was unsettling dealing with a man who didn't value life. He believed that Blint really didn't now. There was a rationale behind it, too. The only way he himself could deal with Blint was to realize that he could be killed, but that that wasn't important. His life or death wasn't why he had summoned Blint. His life or death wasn't vital to what they would talk about. Still, a part of him asked, how can wet boys live like this? "Just making sure I knew where all your soldiers were hidden," Blint said. He was wearing a killing outfit, Aegon realized queasily. A tunic of mottled dark gray cotton, thin, but cut for easy movement. Pants of the same material. A harness with a score of throwing weapons, some of which the general didn't even recognize. What he did recognize was that the points of some of those weapons bore more than steel. Poison.
Is he bluffing?
Aegon hadn't brought soldiers. Even if his life wasn't vital to this discussion, he wasn't going to throw it away.
"I keep my word, even to a Sakage thug," he said. "The funny thing is, I believe you, Lord General. You're many things, but I don't think you're either dishonorable or stupid enough to betray me. Are you sure you don't want me to kill the king? You have the army. If you're smart and lucky, you might be king yourself."
"No," Aegon said. "I keep my vows."
"If only those words didn't burn as I spoke them."
"I'd give you a discount," Blint laughed.
"Are you ready to hear the job?"
Aegon asked. "It seems we've had this conversation before," Blint said. "My answer remains the same. I only showed up because I miss your smiling face, Lord General, and to show that your, let's be honest, rather pathetic defenses still can't keep me out should you choose to try to make my life difficult."
"You haven't even heard what the job is. The king respects your talents now. He will pay better than anyone has ever paid you. He wishes you..."
"To protect his life, I know. Hugh Gibbet took a contract on him." Durzo ignored the stricken look on Aegon's face. "Sorry. I won't take the job. I'd never take a job for that foul sack of wind."
"Let's be honest. Aelin Gunder, who ridiculously fashions himself the Ninth, as if he had any connection to the previous 8 kings who bore the name Aeline, is a waste of skin. Someone burst out from under the tall statue of Duke Gunder behind Aegon. Aegon's heart sank as he recognized the man's gait. Aeline Gunder the Ninth threw back his hood.
Guards! Guards!
Archers and crossbowmen sprang up from every balcony, bush, and shadow in sight. Others came running from the perimeter of the garden.
My liege! What a surprise! Blint said, sweeping into a perfect court bow. Who would have expected to find you hiding in your father's shadow?
You shitting, shitting, shit!
The king yelled.
What are you doing?
He yelled at the guards.
Surround him!
The guards surrounded Durzo, Aegon, and the king in a tight circle. They looked nervous to have the king standing so close to a wet boy, but none of them dared invoke the king's ire by forcibly separating them.
Your Majesty, Aegon said, stepping in front of the king before the man tried to hit Durzo Blint.
Tried to hit Durzo Blint.
You will work for me, assassin,
the king said.
No. I've said it before, but maybe you need to hear it yourself. I'm willing to kill you, but I won't kill for you.
The guards were less than pleased by this, of course, but Aegon held up a hand. With the guards pressed so close, the archers were useless.
Brilliant, Your Majesty. If it came to bloodshed, both he and the king would die, and he'd give even odds that Blint wouldn't.
Fine, then, the king said.
Fine, then, Blint said joylessly.
The king smiled back.
We'll kill your daughter.
My what?
The king's smile grew.
Look into it,
he laughed. A dangerous second stretched out, and Aegon wondered if he was about to be holding a dead king in his arms. Then there was a blur of motion. Even though he was looking right at him, Durzo Blint moved faster than his eye could follow. He flipped up over the circle of soldiers, caught a statue, and changed his trajectory. A moment later, there was a scuttling sound up the side of the castle, akin to a cat's claws scraping as it climbed a tree. Startled, one of the soldiers discharged his crossbow. Mercifully, it was pointed into the air. Aegon shot a look at the man. The man swallowed.
Sorry, sir.
The king walked inside, and it was only 2 minutes later that Aegon realized how close Durzo had brought him to speaking treason in front of the king. Kylar felt the air stir as someone opened the front door of the safe house. He lifted his eyes from the book in front of him and reached for the short sword, unsheathed on the table.
He had a perfect view of the door from his chair, of course. Master Blint wouldn't set up his workroom any other way. But he would have known it was Master Blint just by the sound. Click, click, click. Click, click, click. Click, click, click. Master Blint always locked, unlocked, and then relocked every lock. It was just another of his superstitions.
He didn't ask his master about the job. Blint never liked to talk about a job right after it. The Night Angels didn't like it, he said. Kylar interpreted that. Let my memories fade. The vial of white asp venom was sitting on the table with the rest of Blint's collection. But to distract himself as much as Blint, Kylar said,
I don't think it'll work. I've been looking over your books. They haven't got anything about this.
They'll write a new book, Blint said.
He started putting the poisoned blades in special cases and wiping off the ones bearing poison that spoiled over time.
I know animals can eat some poisons, and it doesn't make them sick. And I know their meat will make you sick if you eat it. Our experiments have proved that. But then your debtor's just sick. That's fine as far as it goes, but this dual poisoning thing? I don't get it.
Blint hung up his weapons harness. Your debtor eats pork. He feels nothing. Maybe a little tipsy. He eats the quail. He gets dizzy. He eats both. He gets dead. It's called potentiation. The poisons work together to reach their fullest potential.
But you've still got to get an entire pig and a flock of quail past the food tester.
Big places use multiple tasters. By the time they suspect anything, the deader's dead, Blint said.
But then you poison everyone in the room. You can't control...
I control everything!
Blint shouted. He threw a knife down and walked out, slamming the door so hard it set every weapon on the wall jangling. Eline stared at the blank page and dipped the drying quill back into the inkpot. Further down the table in the Drake's dining room, Mags and Elena Drake were playing a game of tiles. Mags, the older sister, was concentrating intently. But Elena kept glancing at Eline.
Why, Eline said, do I always get crushes on unattainable men?
Eline Cromwell had been friends with Mags and Elena Drake for years. The gap between a servant and a count's daughters should have precluded friendship, but the Drakes counted all as equal before one god. As they'd grown older, the girls had become more aware of how odd their friendship was, so it had become more private, but no less real.
That groundskeeper Jane was attainable, Elena said, moving a tile.
Mags scowled at the move, and then at her 15-year-old sister.
That lasted 2 hours, Eline said, until he opened his fat mouth.
You must have had a crush on Paul at some point, Mags said.
Not really. He just loved me so much I thought I should love him back, Eline said. At least Paul was real, Elena said.
Elena, don't be a brat, Mags said.
You're just mad because you're losing again.
I am not, Mags said.
I'll win in 3 moves.
You will? Mags looked at the tile.
You little snot. I, at least, am so glad you turned Paul down, Eline, Mags said. But it does leave you without an escort to our party.
Eline had abandoned the quill and buried her face in her hands. She sighed.
Do you have any idea what I wrote to him last year?
She stared at the blank paper in front of her.
I didn't know Paul could read, Elena said. Not Paul? My benefactor.
Whatever you wrote, he didn't stop sending money, did he? Elena asked, ignoring her sister's murderous glance. Elena Drake was only 15, but most of the time she seemed in pretty good control of Mags, if not her oldest sister, Sierra.
He's never stopped. Not even when I told him that we had more than enough money. But it's not about the money, Lena, Eline said. Last year, I told him that I was in love with him.
She couldn't quite bear to confess that she'd smudged the ink with her own tears.
I told him I was going to call him Kylar, because Kylar's nice, and I never found out my benefactor's name.
And now you do like Kylar, who you've also never talked to.
I'm totally hopeless. Why do I let you talk to me about boys?
Eline asked.
Elena can't help but talk about Kylar, Mags said, with the air of a big sister about to pull rank, because she has a crush on him herself.
I do not!
Elena shrieked.
Then why'd you say so in your journal? Mags said. Mags' voice lilted, mimicking Elena's.
Why won't Kyler talk more to me? Kylar talked to me today at breakfast. He said I'm sweet. Is that good, or does he still just see me as a little girl?
It's gross, Elena. He's practically our brother.
You witch!
Elena yelled. She leaped over the table and attacked Mags. Mags screamed, and Eileen watched, frozen between horror and laughter. The girls were screaming, Elena pulling Mags's hair, and Mags starting to fight back. Eileen got to her feet, figuring she'd better stop them before someone got hurt. The door crashed open, almost blowing off its hinges, and Kylar stood there, sword in hand. The entire atmosphere of the room changed in the blink of an eye. Kylar exuded a palpable aura of danger and power. He was primal masculinity. It washed over Eileen like a wave that threatened to yank her from her feet and pull her out to sea. She could hardly breathe. Kylar flowed into the room in a low stance, the naked sword held in both hands. His eyes took in everything at once, flicked to every exit, to the windows, the shadows, even to the corners of the ceiling. The girls on the floor stopped, a handful of Mags's hair still clenched in Elena's hand, guilt written all over their faces. His pale, pale blue eyes seemed so familiar. Was it just Eileen's fantasies that put that flicker of recognition in them? Those eyes touched hers, and she felt a tingle all the way up her spine. He was looking at her. Her, not her scars. Men always looked at her scars. Kylar was seeing Eileen. She wanted to speak, but there were no words. His mouth was parted as if he, too, was on the edge of words, but then he turned white as a sheet. His sword flashed back into a sheath, and he turned. "Ladies, your pardon," he said, ducking his head. Then he was gone.
"Good God," Mags said. "Did you see that?" "It was scary," Elena said, "and intoxicating," Eileen said. Her face felt hot. She turned away as the girl stood. She sat and picked up the quill, as if she could write now.
"Eileen, what's going on?" Mags asked.
"When he saw my face, he looked like death warmed over," Eileen said.
"Why? He barely even looked at her scars." That was what scared away most of the boys.
"He'll come around. You're an angel. Give him a chance. We'll ask him to the party for you and everything," Elena said.
"No, no. I forbid it. He's a baronet, Lena.
A poor baronet whose lands have been taken by the Lee Nought.
He's just another unattainable man. I'll get over it."
"He doesn't have to be unattainable. If he joins the faith, in the eyes of God, all men are created equal."
"Oh, Lena, don't dangle that in front of me. I'm a serving girl. A scarred serving girl. It doesn't matter what the God sees."
"It doesn't matter what God sees?" Mags asked gently.
"You know what I mean.
Logan might marry Sira, and that's as big a gap as there is between a poor baronet and you. A noble marrying a lower noble is frowned on, but a noble marrying a commoner? We're not saying you should marry him. Just let us ask him to the party."
"No," Eileen said.
"I forbid it."
"Eileen,
that's final."
Eileen looked at the girls until each grudgingly gave their assent.
"But," she said, "you could tell me a little more about him."
Kylar.
Count Drake called out as Kylar tried to sneak past his office to get up the stairs.
Would you come in for a moment?
There was nothing for it but to obey. Of course, Kylar cursed inwardly. Today was turning into a long day. He'd been hoping to get a few hours of sleep before doing his pre-dawn chores for Master Blint. He had a good idea what this was about, so when he stepped into the Count's office, he had to try not to feel like a boy about to have his father explain sex to him.
The Count hadn't been touched by the years. He would look 40 if he lived to be 100. His desk was in the same place. His clothes were the same cut and color. And when he was warming up to a difficult conversation, he still rubbed the bridge of his nose where his pince-nez sat.
"Have you made love to my daughter?"
the Count asked. Kylar's chin dropped. So much for warming up. The Count watched him expressionlessly.
"I haven't laid a hand on her, sir."
"I wasn't asking about your hands."
Kylar goggled. This was the man who talked about the god as often as most farmers talk about the weather.
"No, don't worry, son. I believe you. Though I suspect it hasn't been for any lack of effort on Sira's part."
The blood, rushing to Kylar's entire face, was answer enough.
"Is she in love with you, Kylar?"
He shook his head, almost relieved to be asked a question he could answer.
"I think Sira wants what she thinks she can't have, sir."
"Does that include making love to numerous young men, none of whom is Logan?"
Kylar spluttered.
"I hardly think it's right or honorable for me to..."
The Count raised his hand.
"Which is not the answer you would have given if you thought the charge was false. You'd have said absolutely not, and then that you didn't think it was right or honorable for me to ask. And you'd have been right."
He rubbed the bridge of his nose and blinked.
"I'm sorry, Kylar. That wasn't fair of me. Sometimes I still use the wits the god gave me in dishonorable ways. I'm trying to do what's right, whether or not that measures up with what men call honorable. There's a gap between those, you know."
Kylar shrugged, but no answer was required.
"I'm not interested in condemning my baby girl, Kylar," the Count said. "I've done far worse in my life than she'll ever dream of. But more than her happiness is at stake. Is Logan aware of her indiscretions?"
"I asked her to tell him, but I don't believe she has, sir."
"You know that Logan has asked for my permission to marry Sira?"
"Yes, sir."
"Should I give my blessing?"
"You couldn't hope to gain a better son."
"For my family, it would be wonderful. Is it right for Logan?"
Kylar hesitated.
"I think he loves her," he said finally.
"He wants to know within 2 days," the Count said. "When he turns 21, he takes possession of the Gyre household and becomes one of the richest and most powerful men in the realm, even given how the king has interfered with his house in the last decade. 6th in the line of succession, 1st behind the royals. People will say he's marrying beneath himself. They'll say she isn't worthy of him."
The Count looked away.
"I don't usually give a damn what they think, Kylar, because they think it for all the wrong reasons. This time, I'm afraid they'll be right."
Kylar couldn't say anything.
"I've prayed for years that my daughters would find the right men to be their husbands, and I've prayed that Logan would marry the right woman. Why doesn't this feel like the answer?"
He shook his head again and squeezed the bridge of his nose.
"Forgive me. I've asked you a dozen questions you can't possibly answer, and haven't asked you the one you can."
"What's that, sir?"
"Do you love Sira?"
No, sir. And that girl, the one you've been sending money to for almost a decade?
Kylar flushed.